Hey, and welcome to another episode of Ice Cream for Everyone, where play meets strategy. I'm your host, Willem Vanderhorst. So in this podcast, I talk about playful strategy, which means I play games and I talk with guests or professionals in a variety of creative industries that are linked to the areas I work in, and also to gaming industries that are areas that I'm particularly interested in, being a tabletop board game and role-playing game player myself. And if you're familiar with the podcast, if you've listened to episodes before, you can go back. You know, I tend to have pretty candid, kind of free-form, open-ended conversations with guests about their personal stories, their careers, how they got to where they are, and their lives and their careers overall. There's been a couple of other episodes I published that had to do with me playing a solo role-playing game and sharing my experience of it. And this is one of the directions I want to evolve the format of the podcast. I still want to have those interesting conversations with guests, but I also want to have more play in games. So on that, this is the second episode of this particular series of playing a solo tabletop role-playing game called Iron Sworn. And you might want to go back to the first episode that I'll link to that is about character creation. And I also talked about brand personalities a bit in that episode. And I created the background for the environment called the Ironlands, where I'm going to be playing, and the fictional character I'll be interpreting. So going back to that episode, I'll admit, is not 100% necessary, given I'm really beginning to play the character and develop the story in this episode now. But I do recommend it for background. If you want to go back, that's the proper beginning of the series. And I also explained a little bit in the previous episode, and I'll do it one more time for this particular series. And then that's it. I'll avoid repeating it. I'll just send you back to this particular episode. And please bear with me. If you're familiar with role-playing games, I might have explained this a few times, But even then, you might not be familiar with solo tabletop role-playing games. So it's not going to take too long. Bear with me. Worst case scenario, you can skip a few minutes ahead. So overall, the tabletop role-playing game is a collaborative storytelling game. It's one of the definitions I like. It's one of the ones I've heard before. Typically, there's like 3 to 6 people most of the time playing, either around an actual table or, more likely recently, with the pandemic, a virtual table. And everybody interprets one or more fictional characters in a shared and imagined universe and a story that we're telling together. And there's a lot of those kinds of games and a lot of different veins of the ways they're designed. A lot of different genres as well. So genre might be anything from medieval fantasy, like the granddaddy of the role-playing games, Dungeons & Dragons. Or you could play a 1920s horror like Call of Cthulhu, inspired by the writings of Lovecraft. You could be spies in a James Bond-like game. You could go on space opera adventures in Star Wars or other similar space opera science fiction settings. There's lots and lots of others, lots of other genres. And I love those games because I like telling stories. I love interpreting characters. I love imagining different universes with friends. I think it develops creativity and you get to practice creativity. You get to practice improvisation skills. You get to think and practice saying what are the best or right words at the given time, which is part of the improvisation, right? Speaking at a table with people, having fun with friends, I find it fun, and improve self-confidence and improve a lot of other soft qualities, if you will. And I also find the role-playing game, board games, all tabletop games, because I like the social interactions with people, because I love hanging out with people generally. And I love looking at the rules and mechanics and the theory involved behind playing and designing a game and what makes it fun, what makes it interesting, what makes it engaging. And I love talking about it and discussing it. I've mentioned this before, but another podcast I contribute to in French is Les Voix d'Altaride, and we talk about role-playing game theory. So, and I listen to other, like Ludology is a game theory podcast, for example, game design podcast. So there's a bunch of others. And more specific to this particular series, I'm playing a solo tabletop role-playing game called Iron Sworn. I've said that before. So in a traditional tabletop role-playing game, like mentioned Dungeons & Dragons, you have one person who plays the dungeon master or the game master or the narrator or the arbiter, the person that's kind of the referee at the table, meaning they're in charge of the whole set of rules, of interpreting the world the other players evolve in, and they're in charge of interpreting all the other sets of characters. So if I'm a player, I have one character. If you're the game master, you have all the characters, what's called the non-playing characters. So you're interpreting anybody from the villain to a random person the players encounter to the person who is waiting on their table to the person who's like managing the tavern, for example, because that's a typical place where the adventurers might hang out. So you're interpreting everybody. In this version of the game, I'll be recording myself playing a character as well as imagining the world, the events, based on a set of rules to help me do all of that. So I'm kind of being the player and the game master at the same time. So that's a solo role-playing game. And it's different from a lot of people are like, well, that's a choose your own adventure book, isn't it? Or a fighting fantasy book or novel, right? Well, no, it's not. Because if you're reading a book, you have everything is written out. And if you have ever tried those kinds of books, you know, at the end of a page or a few pages, you have a thing that says, well, roll the dice or make a choice based on if you say, you know, X, then go to page 56. If you say Y, go to page 84, page and page, right? So you have two options. And typically, I mean, I would, when I was a kid reading those books, I would look at, you know, what happens at that page and what happens at that page and just like find out about all the different branchings of the story and where it goes. In a solo role-playing game, I'm completely making everything up. So it's just like the path is pretty open and I'm going to use what's called oracles to help me guide the story. So the rules are going to help me guide the story. My own inspiration is going to help me guide the story. The fact that I'm recording it and I'm intending to publish for you guys to listen to is going to kind of keep me on the, well, of keep me a little bit honest and avoid cheating, basically, and try to make it interesting as well, which I'll come back to. And I'll take some, I usually take time to think. I make a lot of pauses during the game, thinking and looking at the rules, but I edit all those bits out to hopefully make it a little punchier, shorter, and more interesting for you to listen to. What else I want to say, as my, you know, I got like the name of my business and my podcast and my website is called Ice Cream for Everyone. And I talk about playful strategy. And as it indicates, I love looking at crossover ways to steal from role-playing games from my work in brand strategy with clients and vice versa. I steal from everything I'm learning in strategy to apply and use at the role-playing game table. I don't know. I might be talking to a very small, tiny niche of people interested in hearing about both these areas, brand strategy and tabletop role-playing games or game design entirely. And at the same time, I'm going to try to make it accessible for as many people as possible or for anybody generally, even though, I mean, it's clearly going to be pretty geeky, I think, but we'll see. And all that to say, any feedback you have is really welcome, whether you liked it, didn't like it, things you think can be improved on. I really would welcome that because any feedback is very, very welcome. So please don't hesitate. If ever you're on the side of learning about, you want to learn about brands and communication, that's your work or living, then there's words like storytelling that hopefully apply to your professional world as well as role-playing games, because role-playing games are about telling a story. And this particular series, while playing Ironstorm, I'm going to be bookending each episode with a topic that's going to be more or less related to the game session. So I've made notes on a few different ones and that I'm writing about and recording myself about. So to give you a few examples of what I'm going to talk about in this episode and upcoming episodes, I'm going to talk about dealing with embarrassment or apprehension of recording myself and speaking in front of the mic and interpreting a character in front of the mic. I'm going to talk about how to deal with unexpected breakdowns in crisis mode, or more specific things like the principles of bringing story to life in five senses. Like they talk about bringing a story to life in the five senses, or Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey myth. So I'm going to talk about that at some other point. There'll be other topics. So I'm going to talk about a topic at the beginning and at the end of me playing the full-on game. So there's a little bit of separation. So, and then strategically, from my work as a strategist, that perspective, I mean, I think playing and talking about those topics is going to be interesting. Help me come up with future playful strategy exercises I can develop for training workshops, things I can practice, things I can use in projects with clients to help them work out their own communication strategies for their businesses. And of course, if you have any questions about the way that I work with clients, or if you're interested in potentially working with me, you'd like to find out a little bit more, don't hesitate getting in touch. Please do. Or if you want to find out about role-playing games as well, or you want to chat to contribute or play or do another podcast or play a game with me, or you want to present your own role-playing game and maybe look at recording with a guest of mine. That'd be interesting as well. You can find all the information on my main website. That's www.icecreamforeveryone.net. Everything spelled out, ice cream for everyone. Or my email is Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M, at icecreamforeveryone.net. You can find me on Twitter at icvillem, letters I and C, W-I-L-L-E-M. And you can find me on just on anywhere, just like Google it or DuckDuckGo it. And then alternatively, if you're into role-playing games first and you're still listening to this, hopefully you'll find my talking about communication from a professional standpoint as a whole interesting. But if you don't find it that interesting, you can also skip directly to the part I'm playing the game, and hopefully that is more to your liking, I guess. So hopefully there's a bit for everyone in this. Now, before I move on to actually playing the game, there's a couple more things I want to mention. First, clearly, thank you for listening. And this is looking a little bit like what I said before, but if you enjoy the podcast, it'd be awesome if you did two things. Simply tell me, please, and then tell a friend about the podcast. So why me? Because it really encourages me to record more episodes. And as I said above, like, any kind of feedback is welcome. If you enjoy it, it really encourages me to keep working on it. It takes me time to put together. And I do it for more people to listen to, hence you telling a friend or taking a minute to give it a 5-star review. Send me a note on Twitter, share the episode with friends, tell friends about it. I just want more people to listen, you know? And then next, I wanted to briefly go over the rules of Iron Sworn a little bit, the main basics. I've talked about that a little bit in the last episode, but I just want to make sure I do this again so that I don't have to do it again for the rest of the series, and I'll refer back to this episode. Now, I don't think it's necessary for you to know all the rules when you're listening. By the way, you can download Iron Sworn, the role-playing game, in French or in English, possibly other languages, but those are the ones I know about because those are the ones, the languages I read and speak. So you can go find them, all of the rules, the whole game, so you can play yourself with friends or by yourself. But just to have the quick gist of the rules, I'll do my best to make the rules more or less seamless. And it's pretty clear what happens and how I feel, whether things are good things are happening or bad things are happening. So hopefully that'll be very clear. But the main way the rules work are governed by what's called moves. And those are basically actions, and each one of those actions or moves involves dice rolls to see whether my character succeeds at what they're doing, he in this case, fully, somewhat, or whether they fail. So the character has 5 main stats that have a value from 1 to 3, as I mentioned in the previous episode. So there's edge, which covers quickness, agility, prowess, and ranged combat. Heart, that covers courage, willpower, empathy, sociability, and loyalty. There's iron, which covers physical strength, endurance, aggressiveness, and prowess in close combat. There's shadow, that covers sneakiness, deceptiveness, and cunning. And lastly, wits, that covers expertise, knowledge, and observation. So all of those moves are used depending on the situation, and I'll pick one move, and every one of them has an explanation of how it works. And I'll refer back to those. I might not go over them in detail if it's not necessary to the story. What's more important is telling the story in the fiction. They're self-explanatory, like face danger, secure an advantage, gather information, make camp, undertake a journey, fighting, fleeing in combat, suffering harm, etc. So typically, when I'm making a move, I'll add the value of a given stat, the 1, 2, 3, any applicable bonus that I have from the situation or maybe from an asset that I have, and then the result of rolling a regular 6-faced cubic die, a regular die. And then I also roll what's called the challenge dice. So that's 2 dice. Then those are 10-faced dice. And I need to roll with those dice, I need to roll below the total that I have with the other, below the total I've just had before, right? So if I have a stat that has a 2, plus, say, a 1 bonus for whatever reason, and then I roll on a 6-faced dice and I roll a 3, so that's 3 and 3, 6, and I have to roll less than a 6 with a 10-faced die, okay? Say if I have 1 success out of the 2 dice is mitigated, or it's a weak hit, 2 successes is a strong hit, and rolling both is a miss. And if I roll a matched number on the 10-faced challenge dice, that's a special, whether it's a fail, special fail, special success, or a particularly bad failure. So, and then, as I mentioned before, the game is driven by swearing vows on iron. So my character in the game swears vows and then progresses towards those vows. And when they complete them, they gain experience points and get new skills and assets and new good stuff. And there's a 5-point scale that goes from troublesome to epic. And then there's a few other measures to go over in the character that you don't necessarily need to have the details, I don't think. So there's momentum, and momentum is a measure, an abstract measure of how well I'm... I mean, all of the measures are abstract measures of measuring, you know, the qualities and drawbacks and defaults of a character in a fictional universe and game, right? So momentum is a measure of how well I'm doing towards accomplishing my quest and how well I'm doing at any given time. The more I have, the better I'm doing. And sometimes this can be used to alleviate the results of a bad dice roll in the mechanics of the game. Then I have health, which is a measure, quite obviously, of physical health and fitness. That goes up to 5. That starts at 5. And if it falls to 0, that's bad. I'm near dying or suffering some kind of permanent damage. It's not good. And then spirit is like health, but obviously it's a measure, it's mental and emotional side of the character. Beginning at 5 and falling again to 0 is not good. And then there's supply, which is an abstract measure of everything the characters character needs to survive. Everything from, do I have enough water and food, to ammunition. And again, begins at 5, it goes up and down, but again, falling to 0 on that is not particularly good news, because it means you're running out of water and food and all sorts of good stuff like that that you need to keep journeying on your adventures towards fulfilling your vows. So then you have assets. You know that I have assets, special abilities, and that's on the previous episode. I'm not going to go over this again. There's special circumstances and bonuses that it gives you. And I already talked about the oracle tables. What's generically called the oracles is a collection of randomized tables. There's like tables of all sorts of information, from names of people I might encounter to situations, names of towns and villages, places, where things happen, what kind of threats am I encountering. And all of those are to provide ideas and inspiration for what happens next in the story. Okay, so if I'm out of inspiration or if I don't know what happens next, I'm never far away from either rolling a dice, using those tables, or I might use images from a Pinterest board, or sometimes I could draw a card with illustrations. I have decks of cards with all sorts of illustrations that can inspire me there too, or maybe more. So that's generally what encompasses calling or using the oracles or asking the oracles. One more point before we go ahead. There is some violence in this episode, certainly mentioned. So there is some mention of blood and violence, just in case you have some little ones listening around. And that's about it for the intro side of it. And with no further ado, here's me again, but playing in the first official beginning episode story of the solo role-playing game Ironsworn. Let's begin with this. Tyrilius is about 15. Sort of about 15 years old. He was really looking forward to the ceremony for him to become a full-fledged traveling monk. He's been an apprentice for the past, as long as he can remember, really. He's waking up the morning after this attack by the mysterious raiders. He's in shock, I think. It's the main operating feeling. It's such shock that he doesn't even know he's in shock. He doesn't say much. He's waking up from his under the fur covers that he has on his sleeping mat, and he's got that's all he's ever known. But he's got a rough. It's not that rough to him. It's what he's known, because he's grown up in the monastery, and this is the whole life that he's known until now is completely turned upside down. He was really looking forward to graduating as a monk. And just yesterday, he was tending to the fields outside the monastery when he saw some smoke on the horizon. This monastery was just beyond the horizon, He was with a bunch of other fellow monks, younger people. It's hot, actually. It was really hot. Summertime. And he remembers just wiping the sweat off his brow, just another day going by in the fields. And somebody just shouts. One of his fellow monks or apprentices shouts out to and points towards the monastery, and they see a black, thick column of smoke. And just everything just moved really fast from there. They just ran straight to the monastery, which was, you know, just beyond, just at the limit, kind of at the horizon. You can still see the monastery, but you know, you couldn't really make in much of the shapes. And as they get closer, they realized a lot of the buildings, a few of the buildings on fire. There are monks inside that are organizing, and villagers arriving from Norm's Rock. They're bringing a chain. There are people that are older that are set outside. You can hear like moaning from a person that has been one of the monks that was wounded. Aurelius was sure he could hear some clash of steel. You start to feel and smell the smoke in his lungs. As they get closer and as he gets completely out of breath because he's been running. And he has a couple of other apprentices on either side of him. He's been running a little bit faster, a little bit slower. And as he gets closer, he sees a couple of bodies that have been set to the side. He shakes his head as he's waking up and he barely wants to remember. It just feels like a knot in his stomach and his throat. And it feels like it happened somewhere else, someplace else, to someone else. He's too young. He can't even fathom what just happened. And with that, he wakes up the following day. And once out of his rough mat made of reeds and hay, with a sheet, basically. I mean, the reality of it is just sinking in again. There's, in the room next door that doesn't barely have a roof anymore, a couple of buildings across the courtyard. Very luckily, not everything has burned, but that's not really what he's thinking at the moment. He's just under shock, and he just goes to get some water from the center of the courtyard and wash his face. Dressing up, there are a few different monks that have passed away in this attack. This is the first time it ever happens. They've heard there are raiders. That was an occurrence. I mean, we live in the Iron Lands are quite dangerous, right? But the Iron Monks are not typically attacked, and the Iron Wardens are the armed force that is the closest thing to the people maintaining order in most of the communities around the Ironlands. There are a few local militias of larger towns. There's very few of those, or larger communities at the very least. But the Armed Brothers of the Iron Monks, the Iron Wardens, are the ones that do maintain a certain kind of order and a certain unity, at least, between some of the communities, if not all, but certainly a fair number. So yeah, he's kind of just a little bit stuck and shocked, and he's in shock in the middle of the courtyard, putting water over his head, looking around, when Father Aurelius, his old mentor, comes to him, just walking with a cane. He's quite elderly. He has a short white beard, mid-length white hair tied with a knot, wearing a quite gray, sturdy robe, which is typical of most of the monks, and and I make my way towards him, just like rush. So to avoid him walking too far, he seems under a lot of stress and strain and looks very worried. I mean, he already had a weathered face. It's not like, you know, it's not like the weather and the hard work outside and teaching, you know, sometimes unruly apprentices, like maybe I was, perhaps. And he says, Tyrelius, you are the oldest and probably maybe the one I trust the most. With the rest of them are quite young, and this, we need to bring news of this terrible, terrible, terrible attack. It was an absolute tragedy, and I know you must be under shock. You must be under a huge amount of shock, but we need to bring news to Father Cadilius at the High Path Monastery as fast as we can. And I'm sorry to ask you this, Tyrelius, but you were about to pass your traveling monk ceremony. You're ready, and we need you. In this time of need, Alms the Iron Provider God will guide your path. And after all, the High Path Monastery is not that far. It's the summer. We'll take care. We'll make sure that you have enough provisions, and I will tell you exactly which way you need to go. And you only need to follow the road for most of it. It's a couple of days' walk away, and the raiders must have gone, or at least we hope so. So can you do this for me? And Tyrelius says, of course, Father, yes, of course, anything I can do that is going to be helpful. And Aurelius says, yes, this is exactly what we need to do. If you stay here, you'll probably be in other people's way. We can tend the fields, or the fields can wait a few days. Father Cadilius needs to find out and needs to know, one, to bring the news to higher order within the monastery and within the order. And also, they can help send monks to help us and to help with the wounds. And while we manage as much as we can, or while they're away, they have a doctor that can help us, or certainly a healer more proficient than the healer in Norham's Rock. And unfortunately, our own healer passed yesterday in the attack. Yes, of course, Father. Should I go at once, or would I? Well, you need to get ready as fast as you can, yes. With that, Tyrelius turns around and probably quite content to have something else to put his mind to than to try to figure out what shock and what's going on and what he's feeling about everything that's happening. So the inciting quest is almost like a relief. And he goes back to his sleeping mat to gather a few things. And to just as quick as can, grabs a bag and his travel cloak that has been used and is a hand-me-down. It's got a satchel. He has a couple of jars close to his bed, and where he learned the art of herbs. So he knows how to make healing herbs, well, how to use and how to recognize herbs to heal, I believe, yes. Yes. And he'll be able to find more, hopefully, on the way. He'll be able to recognize common herbs and make something of them. He decides to stop and pray. So that's going to be my first role. So I can you can secure an advantage, and I have chosen part of my special abilities, and one of them is a path called Devotant. So when I say my daily prayers, and I'm Tyrelius is stopping to say a prayer before he leaves, I can secure an advantage by asking my God to grant a blessing. And dear God, O Iron God Provider, may you bless the path I'm going to be riding on to make sure news are brought as fast as possible. And so I'm going to make a roll. A roll is made of a six-faced die, so that's a, you know, quote-unquote normal die. the one that you're probably used to if you don't play role-playing games, and 10 face dice, which is one that you're probably used to if you do play role-playing games. And if you don't, it doesn't matter. It's a dice that goes from 0, from 1 to 10, basically. And so I have to plus 1 on my god stat. Roll plus on my god stat. Okay, cool. So my god stat, I said, was iron, which is about endurance and fights and stuff, because this is an iron god, and there's one of the stats called iron, so it just made sense. So that's plus 2 on my 6-sided die. And I also roll what's called the challenge dice, which are 10-face die. And I want to roll my number of the 6-face die plus 2 needs to be higher than the 10-face die. All right, so I'll roll. That'll make more sense. Okay, so I have rolled not a great roll. So I have rolled a 1 on my 6-face die. Plus 2 iron is 3. And then my 10-face die, I rolled a 1 and a 4. And that means that for one is a success and the other one's a fail. So that's a weak, it's called a weak hit. Two successes would have been a strong hit and otherwise a fail. So on a hit, it doesn't say weak or strong. So I'm suspecting I'm getting that it's a hit. I get plus 1 momentum. So momentum is something that's good. Basically. Now I get ready. I gather the rest of the herbs from the herb shack, I guess. And the iron pendant that I have around my neck, the iron bracelet shackled to my right arm that is a symbol of my service to the Iron Monks, my staff and a used knife, and I go say my goodbyes to Father Aurelius. And it's still late morning, and Aurelius has told me that I should be about 2 days' walk away, or a day and a half. I should get there before nightfall tomorrow night, if all goes well, if I walk north on the road. So the Ironlands Peninsula is split up in a number of different regions, and I've decided that the villages were located in the coast of the Havens, and the Havens is kind of the central, east-central coastal part of the peninsula, if you will. And it doesn't really matter where it is. I'll just describe the type of area I'm going to be traveling through, and I'm checking for inspiration as well. So we're talking about rolling hills, rocky bluffs, pockets of dense wood, thick with shadow, a few walled settlements, verdant heath. And these are all examples that are given in the book, so I can make up my own, right? But it's just to get a little bit of inspiration. Wide rivers, navigated by wary boatmen, long, harsh winters, okay, verdant heaths, yeah. So expansive region of forest, rivers, shrubland, low hills. Okay. This is the first settlement of the Ironlanders, relative oasis, fierce, uncaring land, giving hope. The winters are long, the harvests are never enough, raiders strike without mercy. All right, so I get ready, my character, Aurelius, obviously, and I'm ready to go. And I have my staff, and Father Aurelius gives me a blessing before I head out. And I'm on the road, and I have the best intention of just heading north straight to the... But then I think of the village. The village is very close. The village of Norham's Rock and my friend Quinn over there. And has the village been attacked? I don't know. I think I should go and check up on the village, basically. So I just made a few, and I hesitate. Should I go talk to Father Aurelius? Or go straight? And I guess from the height of my 15-year-olds and never having traveled further than the village, one, I guess I'm just dealing with the enormity of having that responsibility on my shoulders to be traveling quite further than I've ever been. But obviously, you know, being big enough and having waited for this for so long, because that's what I wanted. Maybe if I go check up on Quinn, that's like pushes it a little bit. And at the same time, I guess it's time that I have initiative. So I walk down to the village, and the village is, say, you know, like 40 minute walk or something like that. And again, I see some just thicker smoke, and I see that some places have been a little bit smashed, and obviously there's been some damage. So clearly the raiders have stopped here as well. And I start being a little bit worried. There are some people that look haggard, tired, upset or bruised, clearly bruised. There's like some very worrying hints of blood that has been washed away with buckets that of a couple of villagers that have been cleaning the place. And this is, Norm's Rock is a small fishing town. It's a small community. There's a few houses that are a thatched roof and made of a mix of stone and wood in a traditional Ironlander way. There's a small dock with a couple of fishing boats. One has been completely smashed and burned. The biggest one, actually. Obviously, there are some reserves and food that has been stolen. And a couple of people died during the attack, even though the villagers didn't pose much resistance, really. And I make it towards the docks to try to find my friend Quinn, who's the son of a fisherman. So I look around towards the dock, and I see Quinn, who's with his father. And he seems to be cleaning up some debris with his father close to his house. So I run over to him. Quinn, are you okay? Quinn turns up and looks with a smile and says, oh, you're okay, Cerulius, are you fine? Or Terry, maybe he calls me Terry. Terry, are you okay? And so we hug each other. And so, yeah, I run to him. He just drops the bits that he's cleaning. We hug each other. And I said, I'm so glad you're okay. Did they attack here? What happened? And Quinn says, well, yeah, they attacked here. It was horrible. His father says, are you okay? They attacked the monastery. They attacked the monastery, and explain how a lot of people have died and I was in the field. So I tell him the whole story and find out a little bit more. So I'm talking with him and his father. And his father, here, I have some random. What's his father? His father is Owen. There you go. And a couple of other villagers gather around because they haven't seen people from the monastery yet. And so I guess for the first time, I'm like a figure. Even though they've known me forever, because I was just a kid and one of the orphan kids that was dropped to the monastery, all of a sudden I am a representative of the Iron Monks. And like the moment I realized this, when I realized there's a couple of other villages that arrived around, are a little bit, I mean, I'll come back to it. It's just like, whoa, this is a little bit daunting for me, but let me put that in the back of my mind as a character. And go, okay, so describe everything that happened. Tell them about the horrible attack. And do you know anything about those raiders? I ask in general to Quinn and his father Owen, but who are they? Like, who are these people that, and why did they come and attack us? And Owen says, I have no idea. Or at least we know that there have been raiders. And raiders have come to the village before. It has been a long time since they came last. It has been a couple of years at least, but they never went any further than the village. Usually the whole point is that they attack very quickly, take what they can get and as fast as possible before anybody from the fields or any of the fishermen can come back and grab a few things and maybe pillage, but just go. That's how they operate. They don't want the whole village there at once. And because they don't usually have numbers and strength, but they are stronger individually and certainly against a small portion of the whole village. So, and I'm going to look at just to play around with the system, right? Okay, so I can use the move gather information. So it's searching an area, asking questions, conducting an investigation, and I roll with wits. And if I'm within a community or asking questions of a person I share a bond with, which is the case with Quinn, I can add plus one. So my wits is 2. I add plus one, that's 3. So I'm going to add 3 to my dice, and then I throw a 6, so that's a 9. That's really good. And, oh gosh, I roll a 10. So I have a weak hit, basically, because I scored one success. Even though I have a 9 as a base, I rolled an 8 and a 10. So that makes it a weak hit. I have one success. So on a weak hit, the information complicates your quest, introduces a new danger, envision what you discover, ask the Oracle if you're not unsure, and take plus one momentum. So that is making me progress. It's good. It's good that I gain one momentum. It's not as good as gaining more momentum, but it's still going in the right direction. So what is the complication information? So the raiders haven't been here for years. And it's the first time they hit the monastery. Something must have changed. Whoever they are, however they function, it complicates my quest. Okay, so here we go. I learned that Owen and Quinn explained to me that weirdly, and this is also the first time that this happened, a contingent of the raiders left and presumably are the ones that attacked the monastery, and they didn't come back to the boats. So they are marching north. Not the whole host of them, a small band, and they don't know what they're up to, but they started walking on the road I'm heading towards yesterday, end of day, late afternoon or something, after they attacked the monastery. So it's entirely possible that this small band of raiders, for whatever reason they have, is up in the direction I'm going towards. This is entirely possible. That is a very bad idea of mine, because I've been told this game is quite dangerous if you go into trouble. But so I go, okay, I think I'm going to have to avoid the road then. Thank you. And I say thank you to Owen and Quinn, and I take my leave. So what I'm going to do is, instead of just heading straight for the road, I'm going to walk out of the village. So I walk out of the village, and now what I was going to do was just head straight up the road. But now that I know that there might be a band of raiders up there or somewhere, I feel like I should just look further. And this is still an area I know pretty well around the village. I'm about to head further than I ever have. So when I walk a little bit north of the village, I take a high point up a hill close to the road, and I take time to really gather information with the intention. The move is to secure an advantage by surveying the landscape or scouting ahead, because I can do that as my path, and I add plus one to gather information. Secure an advantage, that's the idea. So I'm going to look for, where should I get off the road? Where could I walk that I could walk parallel to the road to avoid any bad surprises? And I'm going to secure an advantage with expertise, insight, or observation, rolling wits. So I have two wits plus one because I have a wayfinder. So that's plus three on my dice again. That's really bad. That's a 4 because I rolled a 1. And 2 double eights. Oops. Okay. That's not good. So right now this is a fail, and I rolled a double 8, and double 8 is more than what I rolled, so that's a fail. And so I'm going back to the rule to look about it. You should look out, add a new twist, complication, or otherwise mix things up. Something interesting, unexpected, or unusual. Okay, so this is a stressful fail with an unexpected twist, complication. So I'm from the top of the hill, and I'm looking, surveying around the area, looking at the best way, whether there's any traces of anybody. And I do see the traces of a camp next to the road a little bit further ahead. And seems like it was the raiders' camp. I don't see any of the raiders around. So I have ahead of me the road, presumably with the raiders. And if I go fast enough, I don't know what they're up to. They might be hiding. Or straight up ahead beyond the hill, to the west of the road, is a forest, or at least a small bit of woods that seems to be the best way to go parallel of the road, but risking just kind of losing my way, I think. And it seems to be the best way ahead, so I'm going to go to the forest. So Terelius now stressed out a little bit, thinking I got armed raiders in front of me. Cuts a bit of cheese from the cheese from his provisions. Munches on a bit of hardtack, like hard bread made of the grain from hard. He's got bread and cheese, basically. Bread and cheese, washes it down with a little bit of water from his water skin. And kind of surveying the horizon, thinking, okay, I should be able to go into this forest. And Taurelius has been to this forest. This is fairly close to the village, but it's never been very far in the forest. They've always stayed to the edge, and the edge of the closest to town. And now he's going to go further and try to stay parallel to the road. And is thinking determinedly, okay, this, I do not want to hit any of these raiders, and but I still have to make some way and find a way to get back to the road as fast as possible once I feel like I've gone past. So my goal is to go past, to walk fast enough past the raiders. That's what I want to do. And so put everything back away once Taurelius has finished his little lunch snack and surveying the landscape around, looking at everything, and walks down determinedly towards the forest. So I think I get to make it undertake a journey thing. I said this was a dangerous quest, and there are 5 levels. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Troublesome, dangerous, formidable, extreme, and epic. So I think going on the road, I would have said at this point of the journey is troublesome, but going straight for the forest seems to be dangerous. Plus it's the afternoon, go figure what is in that forest. I mean, it seems fairly close to the village. I don't think it's a huge forest. It's more like a wood. But still, I'm going to go with dangerous. So it's the same roll as I did before. But I just want to do... So I got +3 on my 6 die. So that's 8. That's okay, I guess. 8. And I hit. It's a strong hit. This is my first full-on success. On a strong hit, I reach a waypoint. If the waypoint is a non-tenu, envision it, then choose one. Make a replace, mark progress. As I said, I've already been to the l'Orée du Bois. I'm mixing up my words in French. I've already been to the beginning of this forest, so I start marching and walking purposefully further than I ever had been. And I make a mental point of keeping the road to my east because I was at the west. And I walk with purpose, and I'm just walking through the forest. And it goes from, as I said, it's the summer, hot, quite lovely day, even though these are extremely strange and unique circumstances for my character, there's a huge shift in temperature, in sound. So it was quiet as I walked out of the village. It was quiet was on the top of the hill having lunch. All of a sudden, going through the forest, things are getting darker. And once I've walked into it further than like 20 minutes, past the clearest part of the woods are getting thicker and a tad gloomier. The canopy is covering most of the light, so just have a slight shiver of cold and see some of the moss on the floor that is kind of dark green and brown, hearing the slight snippets of light wood and old layers of leaves that have fallen down the past season, past winter season, and even the fall. There's bits of areas that are a little bit muddy that are left over from the rains earlier before the summer. Everything else beyond the forest is all clear and dry and lush, but here it's just getting darker and slightly gloomier, and I have to necessarily slow down because it's just like so many trees. And while I'm trying to keep my way successfully so far, I believe in the right direction compared to the forest and keeping an eye on everything, afraid of making too much noise, but I reach a waypoint, and reaching a waypoint in this particular case is arbitrary. So it's a number of ticks towards waypoint. So, and I move at speed. I want to keep going because I'm trying to get beyond them to come back to the road. And I take plus one momentum, but go minus one supplies. So supply is an arbitrary stat that mixes in my water and food and everything else. So I go to plus five momentum and minus one supply. And I feel it's still daylight and I should keep going as far as I can. Just challenging myself to pushing through sort of mind over matter. I've never done this before, but I'm like, I've been in a forest. I can keep the road in sight and make sure that I don't cross paths with these raiders. So I guess I'm going to undertake a journey again for the end of the day as I press through. It's risky every time, right? And this is wits again, so I'm not leaving. I don't get the bonus this time, so I'm plus two for wits, okay. So I have a five. Ooh, that's not great. Oh my god. Okay, I have another match, but it's a nine match, and this is even worse than the last time. This is a fail. It's getting late in the day, and it's a miss. Pay the price, waylaid by a perilous event. So I am late in the night, hurrying up to find a place to make camp, and there's not enough light anymore, and I trip in a thick bed of muddy place over a branch, like a thick branch and a half place of mud, and I trip over and fall head first in the mud and leaves and dirt, and plus the thick branch from a tree that has fallen over my ribs. So I have big pressure on my ribs and my ankle hurts, so that's not good. And so I endure harm, and I lose a health point, I think. Let's go with that. And I want to make camp here as best I can, hobbling around and hurting my ribs, hurting. They're probably not broken or anything, but the ankle might be sprained at the very least. So make camp. When you rest and recover for several hours in the wild, roll plus supply. So I'm at four supply because I had it reduced. So I hurt myself and basically healed myself is the whole idea. And I rested and got ready with a little bit, trying to be a little bit smarter about the way that I'm organizing myself for the journey tomorrow. But so far I've managed to avoid the raiders. So Terelius, just to explain a little bit and tell a little bit of what's going on. Terelius fell on this, just like, and it's covered in dirt and mud. It's got a few scrapes and his ribs hurt. I thought, okay, I got to stop. This is not good. He feels like he's too close to the road to make fire, but luckily it's summer and it's not very cold. So he finds a little undergrowth that is mossy in the shallow of a big, big tree that has a very strong and a little bit reassuring root system that is very large, and hides himself in that hidey hole and makes himself a little preparation of a little balm that he has with his herbs, and knows the ways that he's learned from the monks to massage properly the muscles, and massages his ankle to make sure that he'll be fine in the morning. Fortunately, he was very lucky. It looks like it was barely a sprain, so he'll be able to heal it. And he knows to put his leg up while sleeping. Make sure he's ready for the following morning to be able to make the journey and hopefully join back the road. And I think, while not extremely adventurous, this is going to be the end of this sequel while it's night for Turilius the monk, who's left further from the village than he ever has. And adventure just looks like it hurts because he just fell on his face, just falling in mud. So there's like not really much that is extremely epic about it just yet. Maybe Turilius's time will come. Thank you so much for listening up to this point. I just want to take a few more minutes to finish with a few words about fear and embarrassment, actually. I felt like a lot of it, even though I think I'm pretty experienced in public speaking. It, of course, doesn't mean that I don't experience regular like stage fright or embarrassment or thoughts of those things while speaking in public. And speaking in public could be anything. I mean, it's weird speaking in front of the mic because I know that a lot of people are going to be listening to it. And at the same time, I'm trying, the only judge is just myself and listening to myself again. So either what I'm writing, what I'm saying, and right now just looking at my microphone, there's nothing giving me immediate feedback aside from my own thoughts in my own head. And the technical term for fear of public speaking is glossophobia. And I surprised myself at how much I experienced it while recording for this first solo role-playing game session. And that's without even talking to a live person or a live audience. I don't even mean public speaking in front of a huge audience. Those experiences of kind of like fear or various levels of anxiety can happen in, you know, speaking out loud to just a few people. It might be, I mean, to the point, it might be around a role-playing game table of a few people or a meeting room. And if you're a brand strategist, you are bound to be presenting to people internally and externally to clients, like presenting officially, and that means talking to a public, right? So it's super important. And I think that that skill is relevant to everyone. So that as much as possible, I'm going to use those bits and pieces bookending the episodes to talk about things that are relevant to everybody or interesting, at least to me and hopefully to a large amount of people. So what I want to say about that, it's when I do that right now, I'm opening myself to judgment, criticism, or even mockery, right? So, and that raises a lot of alarm bells from past experiences when it didn't go so well to open myself up and ourselves up, I think. I mean, I think this is a common experience. So, and that might be either for real, somebody really mocked us, or somebody really shut us down in a way that was hurtful or felt hurtful, even if they didn't mean it. Or just we shut ourselves down because like we have this internal dialogue in our head, right? And we might have had a failure in the past and we want to avoid any similar failures from now on. And I might have all those, as I said, internal dialogues thinking like what I have to say is not interesting or it's not worth listening to or it's not as good as what other people have to say. And then just better say nothing than feel embarrassed or make a mistake. And of course, sometimes fear is just like totally paralyzing. You have that experience comes from, you know, the reptilian brain or the limbic system, I believe it's called, that fight or flight response. So we feel the same thing as if we're physically in danger, but we're not physically in danger most of the time. I mean, the vast majority of the times when you have a chance to public speaking and you feel like a little bit of fear, like a pit in your stomach or butterflies, those kinds of body sensations, It's you react by fleeing or going paralyzed. Paralyzed tends to be my thing, like I go silent, or attacking. And in this case, attacking might be just, you know, lots of words jumbling out of your mouth without much control or they're not coming out the way that you wanted them to. I think that comes out as just kind of like action without thought. In this session, I edited a bunch of silences out when I felt silly. I stopped myself because I felt embarrassed. I was like, why am I play acting this fantasy role-playing game, publishing it, and, you know, people professionally are going to be listening to me playing this super geeky hobby or somewhat geeky. I mean, it's less and less geeky. There's like Hollywood stars promoting it. So I'm like, yeah, I should do my part in promoting this kind of thing. So I still edited a lot of those silences out because I thought that's kind of boring. I still left the main bits themselves. I'm hoping they're interesting enough, because I want to practice and I want to share my interest for role-playing games and for brand strategy on my podcast. And last few things, it seems appropriate when playing the role of a character in a game, you're presumably a hero, or at least you're like one of the main protagonists of the story, and you're playing that role, right? And it's usually said that courage is feeling fear and choosing to act anyway in the face of it. And one of the mistakes that we make generally when we're in the mix and in the midst of feeling that fear is we think that those things are mutually exclusive. That if you're experiencing fear, then courage is out of the question. When in truth, courage isn't necessarily a feeling. It's just acting in the face of all those feelings. And I talked about those body sensations. And the funny thing is, if you think about it, they're often the same thing. Like being nervous and being afraid tends to be the same feeling, butterflies or pit in the stomach type thing, right? And you're like, wow, actually, I found it very interesting to turn it on its head when I thought, well, actually, those are the same body sensations. So what does it actually mean? Can I flip a switch and make it so that I'm excited and nervous rather than afraid? Or it might not be flipping a switch, but it might help in changing the perspective to help you act anyway. And I spotted a couple of quotes on, I read a few things about dealing with fear and public speaking. There's a lot of advice out there. So I just thought, you know what, maybe just a few quotes. And one is from George R.R. Martin from Game of Thrones. And of course, from that's been a very popular series of books and even more so of TV show. And there's a role-playing game for it, of course, as well. And here's the quote. Bran thought about it. Can a man still be brave if he's afraid? That is the only time a man can be brave, his father told him. So that's from A Game of Thrones, the first volume. And of course, man or woman or, you know, however you identify gender-wise. And the other one, which might be more fit. I mean, now that Game of Thrones has been so popular as a TV show, you could easily put that quote in a presentation for clients. But maybe more mainstream or just more traditional, I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear. And that's from Nelson Mandela. That might still be just slightly nebulous, even though possibly inspiring, but I'll finish with one from Neil Gaiman, because I really, really love him, and it's a little bit more practical, and gives you another reason to try out role-playing games, to be honest. So this is from his brilliant 2012 commencement speech that's called Make Good Art. And towards the end, he says, someone asked me recently how to do something she thought was going to be difficult. In this case, recording an audiobook. And I suggested she pretend that she was somebody who could do it. Not pretend to do it, but pretend she was somebody who could. She put up a notice to this effect on the studio wall, and she said it helped. So there you go. That's another reason for trying role-playing games. And if ever you're afraid of, or you notice being afraid and not going ahead with public speaking or with expressing yourself, may it be in writing, may it be on a podcast, may it be streaming video, whatever it is, pretend that you're somebody who could do it. Think of somebody who could do it and try out pretending to be that person, taking on their role. So there you go. Thanks for listening. Keep in touch if you enjoyed it, or if you have any questions, you can find all the details on my website. That's over at www.icecreamforeveryone.net. Everything's spelled out. That's about it for now. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day, evening, night, whatever time it is for you, and talk soon.